Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Wild Tales podcast. I'm Jason Fox, and this series is all about adventure, resilience, and inspirational humans. The podcast is presented by The Book of Man and in partnership with Talisker, the single malt whiskey made by the sea. My guest today is Richard Browning, a British inventor who has been dubbed the real-life Iron Man because of his quite incredible jet suit, which has allowed him to, well, fly around like Iron Man. Utilising gas turbines on his arms and a light exoskeleton suit, he has thrilled people around the world. And with his company Gravity, they are developing new technologies to make Richard's dreams of human flight a reality. I spoke to him about his amazing work and an early tragedy in his life which spurred on his career. In the episode, we answer some questions that you've asked me on Instagram. I'm going to be sending a bottle of Talisker to the top question. In addition, malts.com are offering a 10% off promo code Talisker15DE, redeemable at checkout on www.malts.com until the 1st of October 2020. Discount may only be used once for individual Talisker Distillers Edition products for sale at £100 or less. No minimum spend, but a delivery charge may apply. Not to be used in conjunction with any other offer, and gift card purchases are excluded. 18 plus and subject to malts.com terms of sale. Anyway, here we go. I hope you enjoy it. Richard, welcome. By way of introduction, everyone, I know you've already got the intro from me, but I'd like to do it in person now that Richard's with us. The man, the myth. I mean, what you've done over the years is just incredible. And just to put that into perspective, or at least like paint a picture for some people there, I think the first time I ever saw, I'd heard about what you'd done, but the first time I ever saw it properly was, I think, a couple of years ago at Silverstone, just before the beginning of the Endurance Championship. And I stood with a mate, actually, who I'd served with in the SBS, and he's from up north. And I wish I'd filmed his face as he was watching you flying up and down the grid just before the off, because it was a picture. But to say he was gobsmacked was, like, it literally, he was at, oh my God, this is the future. What is this? But mate, it is an unbelievable thing. But look, we might as well jump straight in there. And can you tell us about the jet suit?
Yeah, thanks for the intro. yeah, and it's great that you saw it more recently. You know, that's the water park. So you know, you can see it's come on quite a long way. For people who aren't familiar with this, if you imagine essentially it's like a jetpack, but actually much more intimate to you. You're wearing this rather than strapped to a great big kind of box. So you've got a couple of little engines, kind of coffee jar size, either side of each arm. So the net thrust feels like it's going up your arm. And then around the back, you've got a slightly larger engine, about the same power as a pair of engines on your back. And either side of that is a fuel tank. And so the whole thing is, it's not dissimilar to wearing a kind of light fighting order type sort of rig. And it weighs, I mean, when it's fueled up, only about 30 kilos or so. But the whole thing puts out around 1,000 horsepower of jet thrust, which means that when you point your arms down, you go up. And then all the rest of the maneuverability almost doesn't look like it should work, but it does. And we've trained people like within a morning to do this. All the rest is as intuitive as riding a bicycle. You literally just kind of point your arms the sort of opposite direction to where you want to go. And then, yeah, it sort of does feel like you're in a dream of, you know, that dream of flying that some people have.
But where the hell did you start? Like, because obviously I've come and seen it up close and reasonably personal. Obviously, COVID aside, we were socially distanced and whatnot. But you can, like, where'd you learn to sort of, like, there's pipes and tubes everywhere. And, like, I love all this stuff, but also at the same time, I don't understand it. And I think that's where the love is, because it's just, like, bewildering.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as with a lot of things, the outcome looks very complicated. Actually, honestly, when you dig underneath it, you know, as with most things, when you spend some time with it, the individual constituent parts aren't that complex. The clever bit, which we're not responsible for, is how good the human brain is at balancing. You know, when you really think about what has to go on in your head to run without falling over an uneven field, the amount of micro decisions and balancing and, you know, actuating of tiny muscles to stop you falling over is phenomenal. Whereas what we're doing is a really quite static, stable kind of vector thrust hover. But to kind of answer your question kind of more fully, you know, and I've only this has only dawned on me over the last few years as we've been growing this in answering actually interview questions. My whole family background was from the world of aviation and engineering. So I kind of had it in the blood. But then if I'm honest, and I'm not just saying this because of who you are and your background, my time with the RMR, my time with the Royal Marines, and what that taught me about what you can achieve with your mind and body when you really keep persevering and banging your head against a brick wall with the challenge. It is amazing how you can get your, you know, human being to do some pretty amazing things. So I thought, inspired by that and the time I used to spend doing ultramarathons and calisthenics training and stuff, I thought that it isn't quite so ludicrous to support your own body weight with your arms with a bit of thrust on your back. I mean, originally I had it on the back of my legs. I thought that you could learn to balance and coordinate that. And so it was just a question, you know, it's a simple question, but just a question of trying to add the horsepower to that mind and body, and then just have a load of fun as safely as possible, trying to learn how to stick the two together and do it in a way that would almost emulate a bicycle. It doesn't sound very sexy, but a bicycle, when you really take a moment to think, is an amazing thing that doesn't do much by itself. But when you stick it together with a human, look at the outcome. I mean, it's nuts. And it's all down to kind of a partnership between the technology of a bike and what the brain and the body can do. And so in the same kind of way, I thought, why can't we try and achieve the same thing, but from a flying point of view? So, yeah, hopefully that justifies it in some way.
I mean, how long has this been? How long has it been? I mean, it's obviously been a dream for a long, long time, because these things don't just happen. But how long has it actually been a reality? You know, you've actually had jet engines, whether they were on your legs or whether they were just taking you up a couple of inches. How long has that, you know, the sort of hardware been around, and how long have you been developing it?
Yeah, so it started in March 2016. I was still working in the City of London with BP as an oil trader, and I'd sketched lots of ideas on, you know, usually on aeroplanes, on flights to places and stuff. And I thought, you know what, I've just got to get off the drawing board and start making this real. So I got hold of a little jet engine, which is no mean feat in itself. It's not an easy thing to get hold of, and certainly learning to use it and understand how to start it and all that kind of stuff, that took a little while. But I got this little, you know, coffee jar sized engine. And then there is lots of clips online. I mean, there's the original TED talk I did back in 2017. And you can see these clips, but also at our YouTube at Gravity Industries and stuff. You can see I was just standing in a country lane with this engine strapped to my arm in an aluminium tube with a fuel tank sitting in a mop bucket. And I was just messing, kind of working out how to control it. And it was really phenomenal. You could just feel this immense power, like 22 kilos of thrust coming out of this coffee jar thing. They make a horrendous noise, as you know. But actually, if you close your eyes and ignore the noise, it actually felt quite kind of spongy and kind of not friendly, it's the wrong word, but it felt quite controllable. It wasn't trying to rip my arm off. It was just this spongy push, like you'd imagine holding a fire hose. Well, I haven't held a fire hose, but like you imagine holding a fire hose, it was just the same kind of aggressive, but actually controllable push. And so I thought, actually, if I keep evolving this and just add more in the right places, this in theory can work. And so by November that same year, I'd managed to do the first wobbly flight across this farmyard with an engine on the back of each leg and two on each arm. So only around that, what is it, about 8 months or so. But that's where it started. And then since then, it's just kind of evolved crazily. But yeah, so since 2016 is really when I first started playing with it and properly coherently flying, really as of 2017, I would say. So not that long, really. We've come a long way, I'd like to think.
But has there been any near misses, close calls? You stacked it into a hedge at all?
yes, a lot. And we've shared quite a few of these fails. Our ethos is one of not being afraid to take on risk, but as long as if the risk manifests, it's recoverable. You know, I don't mind falling over and possibly worst case breaking a limb. To be clear, I've not done this, but anything worse than that you can't recover from, I'm not really up for it. Again, you know, your days of doing some pretty crazy training close to reality, you know, there's no point in training where you possibly quite regularly could do permanent injury to yourself. I know it happens in training sometimes, but you've got to try and get that balance right. And I must have fallen over probably a dozen times. And actually, and I'll share this one with you. I'm not sure when people are going to be hearing this, you know, our conversation here, but only about 2 weeks ago, we were flying to Bear's Island, as in Bear Grylls. We do quite a lot of stuff with him. And we flew to his island and it was great. And I chased him around on the jet ski. He was in the jet ski, I was on the jet suit. It was a horrendous, windy, wet, gusty, horrible, stormy day. And I was quite eager to then make the flight back from his island. It's about a mile offshore. And I screwed it up. I was holding about 60 miles an hour, about probably 3 meters above the water. And I saw this huge cliff coming towards me, which I was expecting. Car parked at the top of it. It's about 400 feet, I reckon. But it was going to be fine because the cliff was not sheer. It was a kind of gorsy cliff. So it actually kind of catch you okay. Yeah. But the bottom 30 feet was all kind of sloping rock. And I just screwed it up. I didn't calculate enough in my brain. There was me bigging up human brains and everything. I had too much of a tailwind. So as I started pulling up, I just realized, oh shit, I've still got too much forward speed. And I just stacked it into the cliff. We haven't shared it with people yet because we need the bear clip film to go out first. And oh, look how successful that was. I'll be very open here. We will then enjoy later on the shot on the 360 camera of me just literally smacking into this cliff. I was doing 60 miles an hour and in about 2 seconds shed all but about 10 miles an hour of it, which is still a fair speed to hit a piece of granite. And hit the cliff and then rolled down the cliff, was caught on a little ledge. I mean, it was sloping, like I say, but I didn't end up in the sea, which would have been annoying. It was all right. My knees are a bit bruised, but I did about 20K earlier today and they still seem to work. So that's all right. But yeah, that was probably at the upper end of like, ah, crap, I really should have got that right. But it's an inevitable part of, you know, learning. I've now learned to pay closer attention to the tailwinds. It does happen. It's all part of learning.
Yeah, well, that's a pretty... I mean, that's mental. Most people would be like, oh yeah, I stacked it into a cliff and oh yeah, I'm pretty much injured for eternity, but mate.
Yeah, I think as you get older, I'm sure you've noticed this as well. Yeah, it does take longer to recover. And I think I've had 3 falls over lockdown. And I've just taken longer to heal, but all of them I've got away with it all right. I seem to still have in my brain how to fall. I still seem to fall okay. So as long as that keeps up, and I need to try and reduce the number of times I keep learning in this manner. But generally, I mean, I've got 7 other pilots in the team, and you know, everybody's fallen over from a few feet onto grass, and it's annoying. And often you do more damage to the equipment than anybody else. No one's ever done any permanent damage themselves, and that's one of the reasons why we don't fly really high, because you know, you encounter something you weren't expecting, and you fall from 100 feet onto anything, and you're going to be in real trouble. So we just don't do that.
I don't suppose there's any requirement to go too high, is there? Because, I mean, what's up there?
Tom, absolutely spot on. Most people say, oh, how high can you go? And, you know, technically, we could go hundreds of feet, probably even thousands of feet. And the fact there was an incident recently in the news about a supposed jetpack sighting on the approach into LA airport. And I got lots of media in the US asking me about that. And I said, well, technically we could do that, but I think the highest I've been is about 80 feet over water with a wing system that we were testing. And I pulled up too sharp and climbed higher than the usual 30, 40 feet we hold over water. And, you know, I'm sort of looking down thinking, yeah, I don't really want to be up here. It's just going to hurt a lot if I have a problem. And you're absolutely right. From a military search and rescue and an entertainment point of view, there's nothing up there. There's no reason to be there. You've just created a load of risk. So, yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, you do quite a bit. You do a reasonable amount over water, don't you? Because obviously, is that mainly because of the safety aspect to a certain degree?
Yeah, like the world record we set back in November last year, that was 85 miles an hour. And I mean, that's still going to hurt even hitting the water, you know, even if it's water hitting it at that speed. But yeah, most of the stuff we do that's aggressive, as in with testing wings, going fast, doing something a bit crazy, is ideally over water. It really does a lot of damage to the equipment. It's about 10 grand's worth of damage if you go in. But we wear enough buoyancy that we don't sink. And then we have a water triggered life jacket to go off as well. So actually, from a human point of view, you're really safe. That is safer.
Yeah. Have you stacked it into the water then? Or has anyone, any of the...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, quite a bit. I think in total, we probably had 5 or 6 swimming occasions, and I'm probably responsible for 3 of those. I had the worst one was, and it was an experimental system with a wing. And luckily, I was just pulling up, slowing down, but I was still going quite quick. And I had a wiring problem. It's my fault. And the arm engine shut down, but the rear didn't. So I basically just upended and then just plowed like a human sort of V1 flying bomb straight head first into the water. But I mean, it's water, right? I mean, it's like you see YouTube clips of young folks jumping off ridiculous things, and I wouldn't condone that, but they, you know, most of the time survive a lot higher, an awful lot higher than I'm jumping in with or falling in with all the protection on. So, yeah, it's not ideal falling in the water. Jet engines don't like water.
Did you, I mean, a lot of these stories it does sort of remind me slightly of watching Robert Downey Jr. in the Iron Man film. Was there some inspiration taken from that, or not really? And it's just coincided.
Yeah, no. So I absolutely, honestly, didn't set out to go and build an Iron Man suit. I can't deny that when we got the first one to fly, it started to dawn on me that the handful of people who came to see it before we launched all went, "Oh my God, it looks like an Iron Man suit." And I was thinking, well, oh, okay, well, maybe we can use that, but we'll be subtle about it. I'm not going to go and dress up in a load of gold and red plastic. But actually, it's really powerful for other people who see it to often, I don't know what you thought when you first saw it, but a lot of people, their first reference point they have is, you know, Rocket Man, Iron Man, the Jetsons, or something, some kind of usually make-believe character that was flying. And actually, that's quite cool, because usually people are quite inspired by turning science fiction into reality. But on the Iron Man thing, we had this ridiculous privilege. It was about 6 months after we launched back in 2017. We were contacted by the CGI team, the computer graphics guys behind Iron Man 1. They reached out and said they agonized over all those scenes when Tony Stark is kind of trying to learn to fly in his fancy garage and smashing into all his cars, and that funny robot is spraying CO2 all over him. All of those scenes, they had to guess at what it would be like. And there's a moment where he kind of straightens up and kind of owns it and sort of gets it. Well, if you watch any of the clips of any people learning to do this, even my 13-year-old from last week, he's nearly at that stage. Everybody does the same thing. There's this bit where you're frankly being bullied by it. And then there's a moment where you get your weight over the top of it and your brain just clicks in like a kid learning to ride a bike. And it just all goes calm and smooth. So they were so excited when they came and saw it, because they were like, "Oh my God, this like validates what we're trying to guess at." So we love that, because that was a lovely marriage of science fiction with, you know, what we've built. So that was fun.
So can you explain to people as well? Because I remember we spoke about this very briefly, because you know you were busy and you know people were busy. But I was trying to get like you're operating some machinery in what, like a fighter pilot. It's four dimensional, isn't it? It's not like you're on a road and you just got to concentrate on what's on that level playing field with you. You've got to think about above, below, behind, in front. It is very much more four dimensional.
Yeah, I think there's five, because I think it's rotation as well as the other one. It's five axis or whatever. But look, that all sounds very complicated, but then think what has to go on in a gymnast brain when they're doing triple backflips down a runway, or a BMX jumper, or you know, somebody jumping a BMX, or somebody trying to do something on a skateboard. They got all the same problem, but vastly less time to think about it. Whereas actually, nothing happens particularly quickly compared to that with, when you're flying. I mean, yes, it's quick and nimble, as you've seen, but you're fundamentally stable. You'll have to come and have a go with it. It's very hard to describe. Again, looking at a bicycle, if you've never seen a bicycle and I held it up in front of you and then dropped it on the floor, you'd look at it and go, "That must take years to learn to do anything with." But your brain just kind of rewires quickly and goes, "Oh shit, I've got this. This is actually a bit easier than walking." So in the same way, we've seen that now with over 50 clients that have learned to fly with us. It's really hard to describe that believably, but that seems to happen.
But then again, you are missing out birds. Have you ever had any incidents?
We were doing some wing testing. It was endurance testing down at this lake that you see a lot on our social media. It's a long, skinny lake down here in Wiltshire. And there was a swan gradually taking off down the lake. And I thought, oh, that'd be kind of fun. And I was hammering along at 40, 50 miles an hour. And it was coming towards me. And I thought, well, I'll just gradually turn to the right. And it turned to the left. And I was thinking, ah, crap. So then it was a little comedy moment where I was turning the other way. And we were gradually running out of time to decide on which way, a bit like parachutists going towards each other. You didn't have the agreed, everybody turn left and then it works. And the clip, I think we posted that. It's one of those things where it doesn't look very close on the clip, but actually it was only about 2 meters to my side. And that was insane. Because by the time it had got up, it must have been doing probably 40 miles an hour. I was doing easily 40 or 50. And that felt like a big piece of bird going past me the other way. So no, we haven't had a bird strike, but we nearly did then. That's to be avoided, I think. That would hurt.
You need to start looking at that Iron Man armor, red and gold. Protect you from any flying pigeons. Yeah. What does it run on?
So the preference is jet fuel, but actually, to most people's surprise, it'll also run on road diesel. Road diesel and jet fuel are very similar, and diesel's just dirtier. So if you shut down, you get a big puff of blue smoke. Other than that, they're really not very different. So actually, it's nice to know that you haven't got two big sacks of gasoline or something terrifying on your back. You know, the diesel is really hard to set fire to. And if it does set fire to itself, I mean, if you do set fire to it, it's a very lazy, slow flame for quite a while. So we've never, touched wood, you know, in 4 years, ever had any kind of heat or fire issue with this, which is quite a surprise to people. They all seem to think I'm going to burst into flames at any moment.
What are the what sort of innovations have you put onto it, like modifications that have now? Because I suppose the way I see it now and seeing you, are you sort of getting to the point where it's a refined bit of technology?
Kind of. The one you saw us fly and the ones that are all in the background there, we call them the Mark II suit, because the Mark I was the one with the two little rear engines that sat on my legs, and then they did gradually make their way up my legs. But this is the Mark II suit. There is something sitting, I can't show it on camera at the moment, but there's something sitting just to my side, which I was just messing around with before we dialed in, which is the Mark III suit. I am so excited by this because, to answer your question, what we fly at the moment is going to look completely terrible compared to what we've now got sitting on the table. I believe for a while that because what we do is so new and different, it would suggest that having cracked at least stage one, that there's many more stages to go that can get exponentially, well, not quite exponentially, but extremely rapidly better. You know, it's like if you build the very first motor car, you know, they were terrible and unreliable and whatever, and look at the journey they've been on, right? I mean, they barely ever break down and all that sort of stuff. So the Mark III suit there is going to seem like I'm making these numbers up. The current one takes about 45 seconds to start up. If you remember, you know, it's a sort of quite dramatic gradual wind up, but you do stand there like a lemon for what seems a little while waiting for them all to warm up. Although still 45 seconds is way quicker than any other aircraft takes to kind of warm up. The one sitting on the desk over there is 10 seconds. So you could be having a conversation like this. I could be wearing the suit and you could say, right, I'm going to go and relocate myself to that, you know, building top. And 10 seconds start up, step off, land on it, shut down, and then we carry on chatting. It's kind of ridiculous. It also, for something that weighs the same weight as this system here, or system in the back, develops another 20 kilos of thrust. So you can carry a 20 kilo heavier person or 20 kilos more fuel or 20 kilos of equipment or whatever you choose. So that's a huge win. And the whole thing, rather than having the electronics which sort of creep around your sides a bit, which was handy in the early days because you could look down and even kind of sort some problems out and change batteries yourself and stuff, we've tucked all of that away. That's all gone. It's all shrunk down to virtually nothing hidden in the suit. So you've literally got what looked like a sort of day backpack kind of thing, very small, smaller than the current one, and two little arm mounts, and that allows you to fly for longer, further, faster, and quicker, and everything. So yeah, we're gonna have to reveal that hopefully in the next few weeks or so. But yeah, there's plenty more to come, and I haven't even mentioned the wing system as well.
Wow, that's that's awesome. What's going on with the? So you mentioned clients earlier. Who do you sort of usually have as clients, if you can talk about it?
Yeah, we have. I mean, we have about 50 people a day contact us asking to do flight training, and I mean, it's not cheap. So you know, some then are a bit surprised how much it costs, and it's only that because otherwise we'd spend all the time training people, and it's quite expensive equipment to put together and stuff. So anyway, they tend to be business kind of leaders, entrepreneurs, business owners, people with a decent bit of money. Maybe they. You know, climb mountains, do extreme skiing, motor racing. I don't know. They want a bit of a rush doing something kind of fun and exciting. Not that this has to be particularly physically difficult now at all. We've had several men and women in their 70s come and do this and do brilliant at it. If you listen to the instructions, you can literally do it within about 10 minutes. We've had quite a few people do that. Otherwise, some people do just wrestle it for a while. Again, a bit like watching different children learn to ride a bike. Some people take many days to learn. Other people pick it up straight away. But yeah, a cross-section of men and women from all over the world, really. Some quite famous people as well have come and done it with us. Either here, we have another setup in LA in Camarillo Airport. There's a private jet terminal there where we go and borrow some of their apron every now and then. Obviously, that's kind of difficult. We haven't done that this year so far. And we've just set up a new training place in Goodwood. So we worked with the Goodwood, the Duke and his son. His son actually flies with us as well. He's the heir to the whole Goodwood estate thing. And if you imagine the Festival of Speed, the fact they used to have Spitfires positioned there, they've got all the, you know, the revival, all the old cars and all the motor racing stuff. It's kind of up their street. So that's the new best place to go and train. And we've got a lot of people lined up to come there, but in small COVID acceptable groups, of course.
Oh yeah, Yeah. Hopefully sometime next year there'll be a lot more people being able to witness the speed of the jet suit. Mate, how did you, I'm going to go back to the beginning so it makes a little bit more sense. What was your childhood like?
Kind of mixed, I'd say. It was all going pretty well until I was about 15. I mean, I was an only child. I went to boarding school when I was about 9 because I had a busy kind of entrepreneur, engineer father and a mother that had a big career in the city and stuff. So I went to boarding school, which is kind of cool. It was tough at the time, but it was kind of, I suppose, character forming. The big kind of inevitable shock, which had a big influence on my life, but luckily ended up positive, I suppose, in terms of the direction it pushed me in, was my father. He took his own life when I was 15, which is that business, the entrepreneur thing I mentioned. I just watched that fall apart and it kind of tore the family apart a bit. It's one of those kind of shitty things that you either get stronger from or otherwise you let screw you up. And I suppose it left me with a sort of what's the worst that can happen ethos to life. And then I, from that moment onwards, just grasped every opportunity I could to, test myself and try and achieve, interesting stuff. And also it also taught me the value of building a kind of firm financial kind of footing before I go and venture off to do something sort of high risk from a business point of view anyway, something crazy. So that's why I spent 16 years earning money in a relatively conventional job and putting that away before I properly tapped the inner kind of entrepreneur, if you like. when did this, I would have been too scared, I think, to do this in my early, in my earlier years.
So do you think that this was obviously with the influence that came from being your dad's son, and then obviously this was a dream of yours, is that right? Am I right in thinking that? And that you went out, did your sort of like corporate stuff, got yourself into a position, and then you were able to sort of follow what that dream from an early age was?
Yeah, I can't say I had a dream of building some sort of flying machine or anything. I mean, I used to fly gliders with my father. I used to, constantly talk to him about aviation-y things. I could probably describe how a helicopter works in terms of the swash plate and deflecting the blades and whatever. I could probably do that at age 10 or 12 or something, just because he was an aeronautical engineer, very passionate about building things. And I used to, spend all my childhood around his workshop building and making and breaking things and stuff. I think it's more that.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
His spirit was very much one of getting probably slightly disproportionately excited about an amazing, crazy engineering idea and imagining what would happen if you managed to make it work. You imagine what was going through your mind, just daring to imagine getting through selection and just what it might feel like and the achievement or whatever. It's the same thing, whether it's running a business or trying to achieve a marathon or get your ass off the couch and run a 5K park run. It's the same process of daring yourself to take on a challenge that you don't think you can do necessarily, and then hoping every now and then that out of 20 or so attempts at that, one or two actually succeed. I think I inherited from him that sort of mindset. And in some ways, to get a bit kind of self-analytical about it, I'm probably, in a lot of things I do, I'm probably trying to drag a seemingly near impossible idea over the line because I saw my dad try and do that and fail at it. And so if I manage to achieve one of those, it'll make it all good. Now, whether if that's what's really going on in my head, well, so be it. But it's led me to take on some some fun and interesting things that have led me to have a fairly interesting life so far. So I'm not really complaining. But I think that might be part of it.
Yeah. Do you have where you are now? Are you at home?
Yeah. pub is next to my house, which is much better commute than I used to have going to Canary Wharf from here.
so you've got like an inventor's workshop where you just like tinker away, and I'm trying to imagine something along the lines of Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Yeah, do you know, not many people reference that, but you're absolutely spot on. That, I don't know about you, but I love the beginning of that film. It gets a bit creepy with the German guy with all the guys with white coats and the and then trying to build their own flying car again. I prefer not that analogy, but
it's the one where he's on that on the rails and he's got that rocket pack, hasn't he?
I think he's Caractacus Potts, I think is the name. Or you can go to the Back to the Future crazy guy with the lab coat and the mad ideas. Yeah, in a way, our lab is a little bit like that. I mean, I've got like grass keys hanging from the ceiling. We've got a BB chain gun in the corner there. My whole team, I mean, I'm 41. My whole team are in their mid to early 20s. And we have a huge amount of fun doing what we do. We've got to never, you know, lose sight of the safety side. But it is honestly a massive privilege and a laugh to be goofing around in here doing all sorts of funny stuff with the technology we've got. So, it is a bit of the analogy is fairly apt, I would say.
Oh, good. I'm glad that you didn't burst my bubble and that was how I imagined it is how it is.
Yeah.
So you like I almost want you to have some like a contraption that helps the chicken lay the egg and it brings it to your plate. But anyway, moving on.
Yeah, I would say so. To slightly disappoint you, most of the mad stuff in here is flying and jet suit related. If only we had more time, we'd do more things. And what I'm about to say is still jet engine related. But I mean, and we put this on social media. We had some jet engine hanging around and we had an inflatable canoe. And we thought, well, there's an opportunity there. Why don't we see how fast we can make the canoe go? So two of my colleagues married those two things together. And then we created what we called the Jet Yak, which is a jet engine powered kayak. In reality, the whole thing just flexed and turned into a bit of a banana and did completely the opposite of getting up on the plane. It tried to ram through the plane. As a result, did not go very fast. It was quite funny. So we've done a lot of silly things like that. And we have chickens. So you may have got my mind thinking now. I've only had more time.
There we go. See, I'm helping with the inspiration. Surely. You've got to be sort of reasonably fit to operate that bit. I know you said you've had a few older people doing it, but they can't just be frail individuals, can they? You must pull some G as well if you're putting in some rotations or some turns at speed.
So I would say in the early days, the calisthenic stuff I used to do that used to get me out of the office, that turned out quite useful, being able to manage your own body weight in a variety of seemingly ridiculously awkward kind of positions, like holding the flag and stuff, at least gave my shoulders some decent strength in lots of motions, which was very useful in the experimental times. We've now sort of tweaked and tinkered with a lot of things in this to make it as easy as possible. So the arm engine mounts, I can even grab one later if you want, but those arm engine sort of assembly things, there's all sorts of clever little angles in them, which mean as you accelerate, they actually lift themselves roughly into where you need them. So you really are just leaning on them. You're not even having to kind of dumbbell or arm raise. That really helps. But I would say, so for our clients, it's actually quite easy now. Instances like hitting the bottom of a 400-foot cliff and then having to walk up it with the remains of a suit hanging off you when you were already quite knackered and you were going to deliberately fly up it because it was going to be almost impossible to walk all the way up it with all that gear. The moments like that seem very familiar back to the RMR time and where I think, yes, it's a good thing I'm still reasonably fit. Yeah. And film sets, and you know what it's like hanging around on TV sets and stuff and being asked to do the same thing 20 times. That can get really tiring. Standing around in 30 kilos of gear waiting to just constantly repeat the same flight. It's those things that get you pretty tiring. And yeah, racing and flying really fast and in a maneuverable kind of way, a bit like, you know, the difference between picking up a mountain bike on your drive and just pootling around in a circle versus racing a mountain bike. It helps if you're fit, light and strong, I suppose. In the same kind of way.
So what's your routine?
Running. I just did 20K earlier today just because I find that is the best way of chilling my brain out. Clears my head a lot. And I can listen to something, just takes my brain away. It's the closest I'll ever get to meditating or doing yoga or something. I used to do all calisthenic stuff, but honestly, just hefting this gear around and flying quite often is a pretty good, decent workout now for me. I wish I had more time. to get back into the calisthenics. I really should, but it's I don't really have any routine now other than that.
How do you switch off? Because I should imagine being an inventor that your mind races at a million miles an hour, trying to think of all these weird and wonderful things to make the suit even better. But how do you switch off? How do you keep yourself on a level playing field mentally?
My wife is good at helping me do that. She's very good. I mean, we've got two. She's very good at grounding me. We've got a kind of busy family life. You know, I've got 13 and 12 year old boys. You know, so next to this place, you know, is a busy family life, and that's always good just to keep you grounded. But I think if I was, you know, if I didn't have a family like that, I think I'd just constantly spend the whole time in here working on mad things. And then to answer your question, it is just running. That's about the only thing I've ever found that calms my busy brain down. I find that really. It's the same with you, isn't it? I mean, working out and just, you know, burning off some energy, that's about the only thing that...
Yeah, for me, like, definitely the exercise thing's mega important. Went for a run for the first time in a while the other day. No, I got mega into running during lockdown, actually. You know, you sort of, you know, you go through fits and starts with different types of exercise. And I was sort of like, because of the lockdown thing, I was like, well, I need I've got an excuse. The only excuse to go out and do something is to go for a run. So I got big into it again. Then I sort of like wavered off. We did a bit of work in Australia not long ago. And, you know, we were too busy there to get amongst anything that resembled running as far as people are concerned. But yeah, it's like so important for me to be able to go and exercise, because as soon as I've done it in that, you know, in you got the 24-hour period, as soon as I've done the exercise, I'm like, I don't care what else I've got going on. I can just chill out.
Really important. They've done a lot of science around how it releases a lot of brain chemicals and does all sorts of stuff. I've had some of my best ideas running as well, because I'm sort of distracted, and then the noise quietens down and they'll percolate to the surface, and I'll think, oh, hang on a minute, that's really obvious, why didn't I think of that? And I'll voice message my team, poor my team. And especially running in the countryside and just having the visual stimulus of looking at forests and pathways and, you know, fields and stuff, I just love that. I would really struggle if I couldn't get out and do that. I feel very sorry for the people who during lockdown in some countries were not allowed out of their flats. I don't know how. I guess you can do your own kind of house workout, but I'd just go a bit mad, I think.
I just did 2 weeks quarantine. I say just, it was a few weeks ago. I did 2 weeks quarantine in Australia in a hotel room. And I was dreading it, to be honest, because we'd obviously done all our lockdown and all this sort of stuff when we were back home, you know, when it all kicked off. And I was like, I actually got into it. I was lucky enough to have some kit from a gym delivered. So I had a bike. But I tell you what, I got into a routine that was awesome, and I really even though I wasn't allowed out, I was still able to keep my sort of sanity in check just from doing a little bit of exercise and sort of allowing myself to sort of like, whilst doing it, like you said with your running, you sort of like, that's where you come up with some great ideas, and you know, there was actually some half decent ideas that came out of my head for once because of that routine I had.
That took you planning that, though, right? I mean, you've got to put a lot of discipline and planning into that. Otherwise, that would just drive you nuts, I think. I mean, that's hard.
Yeah. Well, it was to be like the first couple of days, I suppose, you're like, oh, I don't like doing this. I don't like being told what to do at the best of times. I don't know how I made it in the military. But once you got into it, I was like, oh, no, this is actually, it's okay, actually. I'm like, no one's coming around to pester me. I can just get on with, I can get up in the morning, jump on the bike straight away, and then I'm away, you know, doing whatever I need to do in my head. But
you'd be quite happy being a bit of a hermit then, by the sounds of it. That's all right. You sort of tested yourself out. Yeah, screw everybody else.
It was coming to the last couple of days. We're on day 12, and they sort of like send you some paperwork, and they're like, congratulations, you're going to be leaving in 2 days. And I was like, no. I was like, I'm not going to answer the door. Just leave me alone. Leave me in here. I'm all good.
That's actually quite worrying, I think. But well done.
It's all right. I'm all good now. I got released, and I was happy to be back into society. So everyone.
Right. Can,
it's all good. But you know, you are in demand because of the uniqueness of what it is that you've created and what you do. But have there been any like absolutely bizarre requests? There must have been.
Yes, I mean, quite a lot. There was a Japanese company that had built a sushi robot that would make sushi. And they had the great idea that I would dress up as a sushi robot, as a prototype, kind of as a sort of mock-up of it. And I would fly in, land, I think then scuttle behind some hidden thing, some sort of barrier, and then the actual sushi robot would walk out and then make sushi. We didn't do that one. It was quite intriguing. I wanted to meet the sushi robot. That sounded quite clever. Lots of weird things where involved me dressing up as something, some weird creature or something like that. I mean, we just had one recently where I had to draw. They wanted, there's an Indian god called Lord Hariman or something like that. And forgive me for probably mispronouncing that for people who are, I think it was a Hindu god. And they wanted me to dress up as this god and then fly around this theme park as the flying Lord Hariman. Except they wanted me to do this 12 times a day, every day for several months. And I thought, even once would probably not going to work, but that could have been quite funny. Lots of weird things like that where, you know, we've worked quite hard to try and nurture a brand behind all this, which represents, you know, fun, but at the same time, something that's, you know, tries to be fairly sincere. We are doing a lot with the military and search and rescue, and, you know, I think we've achieved something quite special, rather than just a sort of one hit, take the piss YouTube clip, and then we just move on and do something else. There's plenty of those out there. Yeah. So I think we could destroy all that hard work quite quickly if I dressed up as a creature. Maybe we'll do it one day.
But I reckon you could have an awful lot of fun on the 24th of December around the world, like winding up kids that are just like, oh my, you literally just get dressed up as Santa Claus and start careering around city airscapes.
We have wondered about that. Yes, you could sort of have a kind of foam reindeer in front of you or something. And yes, I think as we keep growing, then you sort of buy more space to do maybe less sensible things. Do you know what I mean? We launched in 2017. We launched with a great partnership with Wired, you know, the sort of Wired magazine people, and Red Bull, because I thought between those two brands, they represent, you know, kind of cool pioneering technology and the whole Red Bull ethos of going beyond and pushing boundaries. And that really helped, especially with the British press. They've always been great to us, but I was always very sort of worried of being immediately written off as some lunatic trying to blow himself up in his garage, you know, when we launched. That we're well beyond that time now, but you always kind of are slightly sensitive to being written off by the press in that kind of way. But as I said, I think we're beyond that now. I mean, gosh, we were invited to fly around the Queen Elizabeth aircraft carrier, fly, you know, the Farnborough Air Show. We've done some ludicrous things that you'd never imagine that we'd be invited to do. So. Yeah, we're probably safe now, I think.
That video of you on the Queen Elizabeth, because you basically start on the flight deck, don't you? Then you shoot off round another vessel and then come back. That's the one, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we didn't go from the flight deck because that would have been a little bit too close to the whole, oh my God, we're within the sort of flight space of, you know, they had all the F-35s and the helicopters and stuff. So they had a pontoon at the back where they were receiving all the guests. So we took off from there. I went up to flight deck height. It was a ridiculous thing that the British Embassy there in Washington arranged as part of the reveal of the Queen Elizabeth to the American military, which is, you know, you just couldn't imagine you'd ever, I mean, you'd never bother trying to ask to do that, but we got asked.
And yeah, that's
awful. I flew out to every single shuttle vessel that was stuffed full of admirals and generals that weren't expecting this to happen. So I just literally appeared hovering in front of them with a backdrop of a £3 billion aircraft carrier, kind of smiling away with my green lid on, and then did a lap of their boat and shot off again. And you know, you couldn't wish for a better advert to the military of like, oh yeah, that turns out to work quite well. So slightly embarrassingly, for the next 2 days, all the top brass they were talking about was the crazy Royal Marine in a jet suit, not the $100 million F-35 and the $3 billion aircraft carrier.
The reason they were actually there.
Yes.
With that in mind, I sort of know you've got quite a good relationship going on with the. Especially the Marines, haven't you? But obviously with your background, and do you think that there's scope for them seeing how they can use this, develop it? I don't know.
Yeah, our focus really has been to have the humility to recognize that our primary value in life is entertainment. You know, as you've mentioned already, social media wise, it just continues to go crazy and scale that into a race series. And you know, we can carry on entertaining people, create great digital content. And isn't that weird that we live in a world where that's enough to make a business? In parallel, you know, I've always offered to, my old community, you know, the Royal Marines and other military links I had. I always said, look, just if nothing else to shake up minds and make people wonder and ponder what else is possible, let us come along. And it was Colonel Tanner down, Mike Tanner down in Lymston, who originally kind of kicked this off and said, come down, be a guest of honor at the pass out parade, you know, back in Lymston. And why don't you bring the jet suit? And then it sort of escalated to eventually be flying bottom field and all sorts of stuff. And that got the ball rolling and people went, oh my God, actually this isn't like fake. This does work. And you just went around bottom field and half the time it takes, admittedly, I didn't go through the tunnels, but you know, and it just got the ball rolling. And so we've always had this ethos of just being willing to turn up and have a play at what they wanted us to do. And it's kind of escalated. We've done over 12 different exercises now, many of them maritime because we can move people over water. And we don't really care if it's water. And I think with the British military and US military, we've done enough now that we do seem to be proving that a sort of hypermobile ingress and exfil capability is sitting there to be had. A lot of people say, oh, but you can't use your hands. But then again, you can't use your hands with a lot of, you know, parachuting and things like that. You realistically can't do much with your hands. And actually, as you know, the whole fire and maneuver ethos is when you're moving, you shouldn't be firing anyway, right? I mean, it's not the normal, you know, it's really gone. Yeah, so it should be like, you should be only firing from a from a position of cover of taking well-aimed shots. So therefore, actually, if you think of this in the fire and maneuver ethos perspective, this is just allowing those bounds to be in three-dimensional space over minefields and water and obstacles and whatever. We can stow the engines within a second. You holster them whilst they're idling, and then you can bring to bear a weapon. And we did this with the Austrian SWAT team, of all people. And I provided a roving top cover role with an MP7. And I showed how I could just keep bringing that weapon to bear and keep moving between different top cover positions. Especially in a maritime environment, you want to get a bunch of blokes onto an oil rig or a ship. You know better than I do. You've got two options, you know, dangling from a rope in a helicopter where you become a very vulnerable target and you can't really go up, back up the rope if it all goes tits up. You're there when and the helicopter's not going to be keen to come back again. And the whole, maritime boarding thing with the boat and the pole and the hook and, oh my God, I mean, that's a fitness workout if I ever saw one. Whereas we can come low over the water, you know, from all the points of the compass and put blokes everywhere you like on a target. You won't hear us until the last second. And then if it all goes tits up or you want to relocate or go away, every man can go independently away again. So I think it's got some real interesting potential.
There's massive scope, isn't there? But do you, sort of at the other end of the spectrum, do you see or do you have an ambition for this to be available? Can it be on the shelf somewhere that where people can buy it at some point? Do you see that as being an option? I mean, that's commercially nice, isn't it? But I don't know.
Yeah, that might come as a surprise. We did a launch with Selfridges in London. They reached out a couple of years ago and said, look, you know, our founder 100 years ago, some maverick American, had this ethos of making available things in the store that were never available anywhere else or whatever. And he dismantled the first aircraft that flew the English Channel and put it in the store as a, like, come and see this. This is in the days when department stores were kind of like the amazing new innovation, maybe not quite so healthy nowadays. But anyway, bless them. They said, look, come and do a flight outside Selfridges in central London and put one in the store. And we had it on sale in the store. So you could buy it through Selfridges. You still can, I think. We actually have sold a couple, but... which is a bit mad, right? We have actually sold a couple, but we're very sort of particular about this. So we insist people come and train with us first. We get to know them then. We make sure they're not complete lunatics. And to be honest, most people get most value out of learning to have a go. It's like going and doing a track day in a supercar. You know, you get a lot of value out of that, and then you don't have to worry about all the hassle of maintaining, insuring, and whatever. Same kind of thing with us. We will build them for people, but only when we know them. And then also, we kind of prefer to keep hold of the equipment and make it available whenever they want, anywhere in the world. And then we also keep control of it, and we don't end up with incidents like somebody saw your jet suit flying in front of an aircraft somewhere or whatever. That just can't happen because we keep control of them. But yeah, we have sold them.
How much are they a unit?
The price is a hefty one. The price we charged for the last two was £340,000, $440,000 US. And that's really priced on the basis of you really have to be serious if you want to pay us that money and then be trained and then receive that suit. Training is a lot cheaper. I mean, it's still expensive. I mean, it starts at about £2,000 for a day of experience. And it's more like £5,000 if you want to properly learn in a day. But we, you know, that's all priced on the basis of competing with our time for doing other things. You know, they're not cheap to build. It's all 3D printed, though the engines are really expensive as well. And, you know, but from a military and search and rescue point of view, I envisage us leasing the equipment where it's only charged for by the kind of hours of usage, and then we maintain it as well and support, you know, provide a support service. Yeah, so it doesn't need to be anywhere near as expensive.
I suppose you must have thought of this, but having like the jet suit race series where you go around the world different, like, you know, like the Red Bull Air Race, which is really an exhilarating thing to watch. I've been to a few, but I can imagine, I'm sure you've had that vision, haven't you? And seeing where that could go as your own sort of race brand or franchise. I don't know.
Yeah, no, spot on. So we were due to launch that in March. We had the race, the first race all set up in Bermuda. I'd done a TED talk and a flight out in Bermuda. There's a really cool film on our YouTube from there. It's a beautiful place to fly. And we had a team of seven going out there with some of our clients who'd learned to race with us. We've got a shipping container still sitting out there with all our race gear in it and stuff. And then COVID came along. We were literally like 2 weeks away from all getting on a plane. So that's been a bit of a shame, but all the plans are there, and you're exactly right. You imagine a Red Bull Air Race, but instead of planes really quite high up and they have to land miles away and you can't really see the pilots, imagine seeing guys and girls, athletes, you know, from different sports all racing probably only 50 yards in front of you up and down a waterfront, somewhere like Sydney Harbour or wherever, you know, all flying 1,000 horsepower jet suits, and every now and then getting it wrong and all the drama and watching them splash down and all the steam, and they'll be fine, but you'll create the impression of a lot of drama. I think it'd look insane. Yeah, so that's definitely in the plan. I think that will be something we'll be showcasing before the end of the year as best we can here.
Mate, I'm going to start drawing us to a close because of time, but I could talk about this for forever. It's just like, even, I mean, for the people that are listening that haven't actually witnessed this for real, it is unbelievable. It is awesome. But what have you got? I mean, you've achieved so much so far, but future ambitions, what are there more, is there more stuff, more craziness in the pipeline?
I mean, I think the pinnacle of our kind of achievement in a way will be this race series. When you think about what's the point of Formula One or IndyCar or NASCAR, you realize that actually they don't do anything practical. They just entertain, they inspire people, and they leave a trail of interesting technology that gets picked up by more mainstream transport. And actually, what better way of seeing this rapidly evolve, maybe towards something that eventually becomes mainstream, other than having people race them? You know, it's like the sort of supersized version of all the social media we put out at the moment. You know, many more pilots doing really cool stuff in iconic locations. So I'd love to see that scale. Technically wise, you know, I'm super excited about this thing sitting next to me here that's going to start super fast, and you know, that's going to be amazing. The capability we've got coming is massive. And then finally, I would say, I mentioned wings a couple of times. You know, the idea of flying like we do at the moment, but then I think you saw me with one of the experimental leg wings when you came to that lake. You know, the idea the idea that you're flying around by just vectoring thrust, basically just throwing thrust downwards, a bit like a Harrier aircraft in the hover. The idea that you throw that behind you, start propelling yourself forwards, and then generate lift with little wings, that's much more efficient. You need much less power. You can go much further, use much less fuel, just like the Harrier. And then when you want to come back into the hover, you just dial the engines back up, fold the wings away, and then land on a, you know, palm your hand kind of size. That whole thing is still under development. We've got quite close, but I think that's all coming too.
Right, okay. Obviously, Richard, we put it out there that people can fire in questions, and the question that I pick out, they get a bottle of Talisker. So we've got one question that's come in from all of our followers on Instagram, and it's by non-vanilla try. I think I've got that right. And the question is, air, sea or land, what is the biggest buzz? You know, where do you get it?
Well, I'd have to say air because we fly, but then I would make it the answer more complicated by saying flying over water, so flying over sea, therefore, is probably one of the biggest rushes. It's just pretty magic because you realize you shouldn't usually be doing that. You can also go really fast, and it doesn't matter too much if you had a technical problem. So, yeah. So, air with a pinch of sea. Does that answer the question?
Yeah. Because I suppose the sea lulls you into a false sense of security a little bit, doesn't it? Because it's like, oh, it doesn't matter if I crash on this. It's water. Unless you're doing 85 miles an hour. Mate, it's just like, it is unbelievable. And I appreciate your time. I know you're an extremely busy person that likes to tinker around and continually improve things. So I really appreciate you coming on. But mate, it is awesome. Like, what you do is unbelievable, and to see it and witness it is great. And it'd be great to come down again and have a look about.
Good stuff. Thanks, guys. Cheers. Have a good evening. Bye-bye.
Thanks very much to Richard. I hope you enjoyed it. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast if you don't already, and follow me and the Book of Man for the latest news. Thanks again to Talisker for supporting this podcast, and thanks to you all for listening. Take it easy. I'll see you soon.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.